Hi, I'm Joel Lands, Chairman of the AICPA's Information Management and Technology Assurance Executive Committee. And on behalf of our division, it's with great pleasure that I introduce today Marius Gerbeck, who's going to be talking to us about big data, its implications, and opportunities for the CPA profession. Before Marius gets started, I'd like to share his background. Marius is currently consulting through Marco & Associates, a boutique Chicago consulting firm specializing in finance recruiting. He has over 10 years of experience in designing, managing, and transforming processes that involve systems data. Most recently, he spent over 3 years creating a decision support department for a Chicago hospital system that included hardware and software implementation, ETL design, and training of staff. He also manages projects, prototypes, analytical solutions, and coalesces internal talent into effective teams. Prior to his tenure in healthcare, he worked in manufacturing, banking, and the financial derivatives industries in various analytical roles. Marius is a recent CITP recipient, and he's an active CPA in the state of Illinois. He received his BA in economics and history from the George Washington University and has an MS in accounting from the University of Illinois at Chicago. Marius, welcome.
Joel, thank you so much for having me.
Boy, with that background, we are really excited today to have you share with us in terms of what you see regarding these opportunities with big data. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to start off right off the bat. We hear this word big data all the time, and it gets kind of confusing. So from your perspective, what does big data mean? And what are the forces behind it? And is it really something new? Is it something that we've been dealing with for quite some time?
Great. So the concept of big data is not really all that new. What big data fundamentally is the ability to store, process, and retrieve large sets of crude data. Specifically, this is the hardware, the software, and the people who both use it and maintain it. Specific to the CPA profession, it's actually a great opportunity. If we look back just a little bit in time, we will notice that this has been around for quite some time. So for example, government agencies such as the IRS have had to deal with tens of millions, hundreds of millions of returns for quite some time. Any large healthcare organization in a metropolitan area will readily see tens of millions of data points a month. This is quite normal. Organized securities exchanges, capital investment firms, securities trading firms, they've all been dealing with this for quite some time. What's changed recently is the proliferation of search engine technology and social media, whereby large companies in Silicon Valley have to take a fresh look at the demand for storage and retrieval from a much vaster point of view. And what they've managed to do was to take commercially available, cheap storage hardware, create new software to deal with the storage problem and this retrieval problem, and manage to implement it and provide it basically at no cost to most of us. So think Facebook, think Yahoo, think Google, think Amazon. Large telecommunications firms latched onto this very quickly. So for example, to provide a little bit of a feeling for the scale here, Verizon, as of September 2016, had 108 million customers. Just imagine each customer passes a little bit of data every day. Imagine the scale of what is needed to first receive, process, store, and then potentially retrieve all of that information. That, in essence, is big data. What's helped it along the way is Moore's Law, which is the fact that processing power doubled every year for quite a few decades now. There is a proliferation of programming languages at no cost to most users, as well as social expectations have evolved. Millennials grew up on the Apple products, and now we're experiencing a proliferation of visualization software. All of that together, that flow and ebb and flow and ebb, that's big data in a nutshell.
Marius, you've given us a lot of things to think about. I think in talking with other CPAs, they get very confused between the terms like big data and business intelligence, or even data science. How do these things differ? Are they the same? Are they not? And given that, what do you see as the opportunity for the profession in terms of their involvement with these developments?
It's a great question. Thank you. I will take this in bits and pieces and break it down. First, what I will provide is a framework to think about this, and then I'll use a very specific example to kind of make it relative to the profession. So big data, the easiest way to think about that is just the storage of crude data. And when I say storage, I mean the volume, the speed with which it's being created, and its variety. So we're talking about images, sounds, as well as ASCII text. Now, the storage of this crude data, so big data, also has an analytical component, meaning we obviously, those who use it, want to be able to measure the activity inside these storage possibilities. When we start thinking about business intelligence or data science, and I'll differentiate those two in a little bit, we're really starting to travel towards issues with capital allocation. So data fundamentally is an asset that, if it is handled properly with the right harnessing of technology and the right analytical approaches, well, it has value and it has hidden answers. And those hidden answers can provide a competitive advantage in the way capital is allocated. So that's the basic distinction between big data storage versus extracting value from these vast amounts of data that are now just about oozing out of every organization. Now, in terms of the CPA profession, I'm going to lean a little bit on statistics. And again, statistics is a very feared word for some, and I really want to demystify that and take that fear out of the equation. I'm going to lean a little bit on the work of Professor Hossein Arsham, who is a distinguished research professor at the University of Baltimore, as well as a professor at Johns Hopkins. He provided a very neat framework for describing a virtuous cycle of what happens to data. And it has three basic components. The first one is data becomes information when it becomes relevant to a decision problem. The second part is information becomes fact when the data can support it. And third, fact becomes knowledge when it is used in the successful completion of a decision process, expressed with some statistical degree of confidence. So I'd like to use basic sales as an example. This is, I think, a good example for most CPAs, and just about everybody has had to deal with it at one point or another in the profession. So if we think about a general ledger and a traditional transaction pyramid, general ledger sits somewhere in the middle. It's basically a management information system. In some organizations, the data in the ledger about the sales may already be rolled up. Perhaps the ETL was dumped directly from the sales system. Or perhaps the power of the sales journal was harnessed and some of that more granular detail about the sales is inside the GL. One way or the other, the genesis of the sales data starts somewhere in a sales system. Well, if the competitive landscape is changing and additional information is required to better compete in the marketplace as far as sales are concerned, we would want to go back and analyze the actual sales data and bring in as much color as possible. So suddenly all those little extra details transformed from data to information because they are now of interest. When we start analyzing the extra little tidbits, the little clues and so forth, that information, as we get more and more comfortable through testing, through eliminating other possibilities, we start saying, okay, in all likelihood, this is what it's telling us. That basically takes the information into fact. As we start making decisions in allocating capital and investing and creating expenditures, as the process comes full circle, we see the result of our decision. That takes the fact to what now is knowledge. And when we have the results and we can measure the results of that entire cycle, that gives us the statistical degree of confidence. Along the way, there are multiple entry points for CPAs to come in and contribute through things like, is the data cut off properly? Is the data accurate? Is the data complete? And so forth. So there's this vast, vast opportunity for the profession to get involved.
Matt Marius, you've given at least me some real great ideas to think about. Let's say, like I have, people listening to the podcast want to start. Where do they go from a practical perspective? Where do you start and where do you focus on? Is it a one-size-fits-all or does that depend on whether you are a controller or a CFO?
Great question. So at first, big data is really relative to the size of the company. That's the first thing to understand. The second thing to take note of is most large companies at this stage in the century, I think most of them do have one form or another of either big data, business intelligence, or data science. If one is in a large company, it's a question of being sort of embraced and gaining admittance into that circle of influence, if you will. Now, if the company does not have a big data or a BI effort, there's no single right one-stop shop answer, if you will. However, the short term and the approach can be broken down into manageable parts. So let me kind of frame this in terms of the involvement of the CPA profession. We can literally start by defining and prioritizing the purpose for a small team. And when I say we, I literally mean anyone can own this initially. There is no monopoly on creativity. There's no monopoly on who can start this effort. So we can start by saying, okay, if we have a team, could we help perform the kinds of tasks that normally internal audit would perform, but outside of internal audit, with the spirit of improving processes, with the spirit of discovering patterns to gain a better competitive advantage, with the spirit of helping to compete in the marketplace, or with the spirit of cutting down costs? The minute you have that purpose, you can start aggregating folks into a team. And the real opportunity for the profession is, again, helping the journey from data to information, from information to fact, from fact to knowledge. We can help measure the impact, return on investment. We can help measure impact on improved processes and so forth. So what we want to do is we want to assemble a small team. What we're looking for are people who are good with networking. We're looking for people who are great at hardware. We are looking for a DBA savvy person. It could be on a SQL side. It could be on a Hadoop side. We could be looking for a process savvy accountant. We want someone with project management skills. We're looking for someone with the appreciation for systems analysis and data models. And most of all, these folks will have a binding quality. They like to collaborate. When we have that internal talent, it really becomes a team sport by starting to answer those questions. It will go through a sequence of prototypes, and there will be feedback coming back to management saying, we need more tools. This is how we'd like to build out the system, or this is the software we need, or we're restoring this data in this really old server. It's time to upgrade it. That initial group will start feeding the actual requirements in terms of capital investiture into the overall ecosystem. In a nutshell, the opportunity for us CPAs is in the following. This is a team sport. Rare is an individual who has the skills to traverse all parts of an ecosystem on their own. The effectiveness lies in leadership to assemble and make effective an informal team and then build on that process. That's how one gets started.
Okay, so Marius, you've given us a very good perspective of it. As you know from my accent, I'm from Brooklyn, which is the show me. And what my concern is, when we talk about all these opportunities, will this actually work? And I think that's one of the big concerns that I have as long as when I talk with other people. So why should this work?
This is a very tough question to answer. It requires a little bit of faith. My experience has been that the power of human creativity and innovation is everywhere. So it's not just in Silicon Valley. It's not within the monopoly of a single group or a single individual. What I've experienced is that there is an absolute abundance of creative and STEM talent in most organizations. When I say STEM, I mean science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. What happens is their talents simply become suppressed by life's routine, and the opportunity is in freeing up that talent for any given project, any given group. Just because someone does not work at NASA, it does not mean that they are not capable of reconnecting with their science skills from previous experiences, from their days, for example, in college or high school, and release that energy to contribute powerfully. They may be quiet programmers. They may be originally trained as musicians. They are now working as database administrators. But once upon a time, they may have gazed at the stars. They may have tinkered with equations. And they probably quote lines from Star Trek. These people, I can tell you from experience, yearn for an outlet of their talents and are often very competitive. Most organizations do not offer an outlet for that talent to the degree that they desire. What I'm suggesting is if one takes a chance, becomes bold, different, carves out a little bit of space, time, and resources to create an ecosystem, and even a simple core nucleus group, the differences can be immediate and long-lasting. The trick is converting that to a long-term process. But that is the fundamental answer. There are people literally in every organization who are just bursting with ideas and are yearning just for a chance to have a shot at the stars.
So, Marius, you've convinced me. What about from a long-term perspective? How do you convert that informal effort that you talked about into something that will have sustained impact?
You know, that picture looks just a little bit different. The bottom line, one has to embrace the politics. Most organizations have structures, and that's where the answer is leading. A critical factor is to find a high-powered champion inside the organization who sees the value of this nucleus group or ecosystem, if you will. Now, it's important to note that this high-powered champion, once identified and hopefully won over, they cannot be there every step of the way, especially when the political status quo feels threatened and they may act accordingly. What I found over time is that as this nucleus group or a participation in a more evolved group takes shape, giving credit publicly both to those who play that team sport as well as stakeholders that are peripheral to the process, but who are also taking a chance and helping out, giving both groups credit readily, frequently, and publicly builds a reservoir of goodwill. You see, these creative folks, they see the world through the lens of win-win. They want to take a shot at hitting the ball out of the park. They want a shot at the stars, and what they see is a very unique opportunity to participate. When they are recognized for doing so, it gets harder and harder for the naysayers who see the world through win-lose to disrupt the process. And when win-win occurs, not only the individuals win, but the entity, the organization, and the profession wins.
Marius, you've given us a lot of things to think about today. What about the future? What do you think lies beyond where we are today, and how can we best prepare for all the things you've mentioned to us during the podcast?
Joe, so when I think about the future, I think about, is the profession prepared to what lies ahead? And while it is difficult to predict the future, there is enough information in the media where one can sort of glean what may lie ahead. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to rely a little bit on the words of others to paint that picture. At the Minds and Machines conference recently, I think this was in November, which is a General Electric-sponsored conference, the CEO of GE, Jeff Immelt, was quoted as saying, every new hire will learn to code. That's a very powerful statement, because what it suggests is the following. As the programming knowledge no longer is perceived as, let's say, a monopoly of the computer science majors, it means a lot of employees out there will be very much at home with programming, coding, and using technology. That has very powerful implications for the CPA profession. So that's sort of at the firm level. When I take myself out of the micro level, the firm level, and I look at it as a macro picture, I'm reminded of the words by Reid Hoffman, the founder of LinkedIn, in an interview earlier this year on CNN with Mr. Fareed Zakaria, who runs a Sunday morning program called GPS, the Global Public Square. Mr. Hoffman, I believe, captured in a very wonderful way the zeitgeist of the century. We live at a time when bits shift the destinies of atoms. And I think that's very instructive of what lies ahead and what can yet come. And I believe preparation for that is very, very important. What we can be reasonably certain of is that the proliferation and penetration of big data, business intelligence, programming, and technology in general will only increase the risks that apply to the financial statements. I think it's important that the profession doesn't sit this one out. I think long-term, it will be the difference between the participation by the profession in the mastery of these technologies or being at their mercy. At the same time, I am very, very hopeful in that there are so many tech-savvy millennials and generations who will follow them that are entering the workforce. That's what sort of gives me hope that we will stem the tide in terms of really keeping up with the rapid pace of change.
Sounds great. Marios, you've given us a lot of things to consider today. Any final thoughts before we sign off?
Yes, thank you for the question. I do have a few suggestions. If we've managed to capture your imagination and get you excited about analytics, big data, and everything in between, there are a couple of suggestions I would not mind sharing. There is a very powerful book that I recently read by a former Procter & Gamble alumni, one Kevin Ashton. He published a book just recently titled How to Fly a Horse, The Secret History of Creation, Invention, and Discovery. It's an absolute must read. I honestly wish I had this book a decade ago had it been available. I highly, highly encourage anyone to pick it up. It's a fascinating book, a quick read, and it will be very, very instructive about the forces that are driving innovation, technology, inspiration, and creativity. Lastly, if you do take the plunge, and if you want to have one advantage in managing a creative ecosystem or a nucleus group, I sort of have had a formula of my own for dealing with it, whether I can influence that group directly or indirectly. And the rule is called 35-35-30. The numbers relate to the amount of time allocated to very specific problems. Let me start with the first 35%. The first 35% of the time is really reserved for routine tasks. This is when they do not want to be creative. They just want to get through the day for whatever reason. Perhaps they're busy thinking about something else, a family problem or a passing in the family, whatever. That 35% of the time is for stuff they know cold. They can do it in their sleep. It works really, really well, and it relieves pressure from them having to think about problems that really do require creativity. The second 35%, this is the time when they have literally too much energy. They're looking for a challenge. They may be slightly bored. One usually wants to have a reserve of problems that are what I call working prototypes, meaning the stuff is actually working, it's yielding the answers, it works just fine, but it's not what I would call camera ready. That's the time for them to take that into that final phase and prepare it and make it look masterful. Now, generally speaking, they will resist this phase because the likelihood is they created the prototype in the first place. And from their point of view, that prototype is working just fine. So it may take a little bit of coercing and flexing to get them to go forward, and they will resist. That's completely normal. But eventually, they will get that final polish onto the product and get it into its final stage. The last 30%, that one is tricky, but it's the most awesome part around. Creative people have this absolutely magical way of breaking barriers down. You can give them a problem, even if you yourself think, oh my God, how is this going to ever get solved? And if you just budget extra time and you give them that extra time, keep in mind you want to have a plan B just in case it doesn't work out, but most of the time it will. They will be the creators of the most phenomenal outcomes one can possibly imagine. And if it's budgeted in time correctly, at the end of the process, one is presented usually with two great choices, either plan B, which is going to get you through the day, or something that will literally shoot for the stars. And I've had this experience multiple, multiple times when I've somehow created a safe space for them to go and solve a problem, even though I myself had no idea how to attack it, they will find a way. About 3 days, 4 days into the process, if one just follows up with them, one begins to hear a very squeamish answer that sounds a little bit like this. Well, you know, it's starting to work. I've got a few more bugs to iron out. There's this one tail end event that it doesn't quite conform. That's how you know they're getting there. And all you have to do then is just support them, and you have to just help them get through the finish line. But 9 times out of 10, that budgeted for approach, that plan A, will be far greater, will be win-win, and will contribute more to the organization than the plan B ever could. So that would be my suggestion for managing the creative types. 35, 35, 30. Finally, the one thing that I think really, really helps are collaborative workspaces where dry erase boards are abundant, as well as a number of color dry erase markers. For whatever reason, people really connect with their inner child. They love to doodle. It functions as a medium for them to project what they're thinking. And if they have a quiet space to do that creativity in, a lot of that special creation, just like Hogwarts from Harry Potter, that's where it happens. That's where the magic is, and it's just awesome to observe.
Marius, thanks so much. You provided us with a lot of things to think about, not just today, but in developing our continuing education as well as our individual career plans as we look forward to the future.
Thank you for having me. It's been a privilege.
On behalf of the AICPA Information Management and Technology Assurance Division, this is Joel Lanz, and our speaker has been Marius Grabeck presenting on big data and how it can be used by accountants in the future. To access more information and resources on this topic and any related information and technology assurance concerns, visit aicpa.org/imta/resources. I also highly encourage IMTA section members and CITP credential holders to review your biweekly electronic IMTA news to keep up with the latest news, resources, advocacy, and events. Visit aicpa.org/imta/news for the latest edition. Thank you for attending, and we look forward to sharing information with you again in the future.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.